Now let's take up some actual practical manifestations of processing. Some practical ones. Now, we've had enough theory here. That's obvious. And what we want to know is how you get down to cases and do something for a case. I hear that every once in a while. It's very amusing to me. People would be very cautious in saying that to me, by the way, if they knew some of the background of mental behavior. It's quite amusing, you know, to have somebody who is at best just going to butcher the devil out of somebody wanting practical considerations when the theory has all escaped him. You can't process anybody adequately unless you know something about beingness and doingness and havingness and livingness and so forth. You just can't do it. Now, the main consideration that we would have in application would be whether or not we change the considerations of preclear about certain things. How far could you go with just a technique which just did just this and didn't do anything else? Well, you could go quite a ways. There are actually two types of techniques, two types of auditing, two distinct types of auditing. That auditing which is based directly upon the ability of the individual to do, to think, to be, where the auditor is monitoring his auditing straight against what he would consider a desirable end product. And the other one is a rote procedure, which, by the way, mustn't be overestimated, because in these commands themselves, just written down and delivered, you would get a considerable response from a case. So that we have the type of processing whereby you could put a sheet of paper in somebody's hands and he could read off some commands. This would certainly be a lot better than nothing, but, of course, wouldn't follow through very far. Wouldn't follow through to an inevitable end. You have to look at the preclear, and you have to do a lot of other things besides this. It's quite astonishing to me that self-analysis has done in the field the amount that it has done. It is very often in quite ignorant hands. People who just have the idea that they ought to do something for somebody, and they sit down and they read self-analysis to them. The one blunder they make is the interruption of the communication lag. They make this blunder just time after time. They don't understand what a communication lag is. They don't understand that it's an effort to hook up some source points and receipt points to straighten out some lines or anything like that. They don't understand that they have gone with this blankness which comes over the preclear, that they've gone straight into the reactive bank, bing, with some consideration or another. The communication lag is an incomprehensible thing to somebody who is auditing by rote. He says, give me some places where you were not, and 5 minutes later, the person would have answered. But the rote auditor, just reading off the piece of paper, he doesn't wait for that 5 minutes, and he will jam the case. There's about the only place he really does jam the case, because people, by and large, really don't do much in terms of evaluation or even invalidation. They have good intentions toward the case, and they just don't grab this idea of a communication lag. The idea of to an auditor who just would, you know, I mean, hardly even a book auditor, you know, I mean, just somebody reading off a piece of paper, sitting there for an hour and a half while his preclear stabs around in a super stupidity trying to get the one response that he's trying to get on the thing. And just the idea of sitting there as an auditor for an hour and a half, of course, isn't doing anything. And in view of the fact he's not doing anything for the case, of course, this couldn't be auditing. That's more or less the way he sums it up. It's a pretty hard thing to drive home. But if the fellow can't talk, why, you just shut up. That's the line, and if he appears to be drifting off in some direction or another, or starting off on some wild course or tangent, you can, of course, very gently ask him the same question again. or recall his attention to the fact of what we are trying to answer a question about. But your preclear, usually when this is necessary, will tell you himself. He will say, what was I trying to answer? And you, as an auditor, of course, tell him. The less said during these communication lag periods, though, the better off. Less said. And more quietly said. Now, you can take some preclear who has been audited a great deal, and you find him more or less stuck on the track every time somebody is barged into one of these communication lags during an auditing session. You know, I mean, just he's gone in and wham. Here's the preclear's attention scattered all over the place. It's not up on guard or anything of the sort. And an auditor has suddenly asked him another question, tried to hurry him up, has tried to speed it up or help him out. Now, this impulse to help out is the main thing that gets in the road. The idea of feeding the little baby. The little baby opens its mouth and eats for a short time and then doesn't open its mouth for the next spoonful. And you'll see Mama sitting there opening her mouth as she holds the spoon up to the baby's face. Now, I once observed a little child being fed in one of these roadside restaurants, and there were a lot of tourists sitting around, and Mama was trying to get that baby to open his mouth, and she was opening her mouth, and I looked around, and by golly, all the tables around and about there, everybody was opening his mouth, trying to get the baby to open his mouth. You know, everybody was opening his mouth. It was very, very funny. But your auditor will do this. Your auditor will... he sees this terrific communication lag set in and so forth, and he knows the answer to this question, more or less, and he just wants to help out. He wants to get in there and pitch for the preclear. And the next thing you know, why, you catch this preclear some sessions later, and you find out that he is to some degree stuck in that session. Here's our main problem in auditing, is auditing itself. It's too bad that auditing has to take place to make it clear, of course, and it's all very sad, and actually you all ought to be able to do it yourself, and so forth, and there ought to be a central button which we just kind of write up on a wall or make into a coin and pass around through the realm. But the auditor is a necessary evil. He definitely is a necessary evil. If you really want to get good advances on cases, there, you see, even when a person is reading directions and answering them off of a piece of paper, he is being audited by some remote individual. Let's say you wrote down a series of questions and gave them to your preclear so that he could take them home and read them over. Now, actually, that preclear is not self-processing. You're still processing that preclear. You've put a communication lag known as a written piece of writing. And this here written piece of writing is just a communication lag, believe me. You said it, and you just keep on saying it in the form of this piece of paper. And he considers that this is possible, so he lets the time intervene, and he will read the questions off to himself. But you're still auditing him. That's not self-processing. Now, the two types of auditing which you'll find around are those two types of auditing. Either you get rote auditing, whether or not it is the paper itself processing the preclear, or an auditor reading the paper to process the preclear, and actual auditing. Now, there is apparently a third type of auditing, and that would be self-processing. There's apparently this type. If you were to process a case for a couple of hours without any marked gain, you had no a real explanation why we didn't get any gain out of this. There was nothing spectacular occurred in the session at all. We didn't get any changes or anything of the sort. You should suspect, regardless of the evidence offered, that this individual self-processes. What is self-processing? What self-processing is possible? Well, there is one brand that is possible. Simply, as a thetan, first dynamic, changes his mind. You know, you can change your mind. That's self-processing. All other forms of self-processing are a third dynamic variety whereby the preclear is auditing something. Has anything to do with him He's auditing something. Well, we wouldn't say that if he didn't. Maybe he went along 10, 15 years, or maybe even 5 years. Something like this, doing this for 8, 9, 10 hours a day, something of the sort, if he really worked at it, undoubtedly he would bring about an improvement in his case. There's no doubt about it. He would get tired of it and quit it, and that would improve his case. Now, in essence, a person could simply then either be in a state where he could change his mind easily, or he could simply practice changing his mind, or he could get audited. And there's no in-betweens here. That's not a gradient scale we're looking at there, and this isn't merely condemning this practice just because we're auditors and we like work. It happens to be a horrible truth. Now, how long have I watched self-auditing take place in an individual? How many weeks have I watched somebody audit himself without, you know, following into off of a pattern, that is to say, out of a book or from an auditor? You know, just self-processing, just that. He sits around and moons over concepts and this is and that's, and he goes this way and he does that way and so on. How many weeks have I watched somebody do this with no improvement? 208. 208 weeks. I got the case history. Fellow started in at the end of 1949. He says to me, well, it's all very well for you to sit there and tell me to do this and do that and do something else, but the truth of the matter is I don't have to sit there and put up with that sort of thing because I can do it myself. And I didn't pay much more attention to this fellow. This was before the foundations, by the way, and didn't think much about him because there were lots of pre-clears around. It was just experimental runs anyhow. I brought no pressure to bear on him to stay with auditing. I could have pinned him down and resolved it one way or the other, but I just didn't do it. I forgot about him. And the years went by. And one fine day, he turned up to get some auditing. And he had been at it, you might say, practically day and night since the last moment he had sat in my auditing chair. You say that's an awful long time to do self-processing. Yeah, you say, well, of course he didn't have the techniques, that sort of thing. Oh, yes, he did. He'd gotten every piece of work I'd put out, every one of them. But he had avoided doing such things as self-analysis. He had avoided doing such things as the handbook for pre-clears or anything like that where he could read the directions out. He would get a theory or concept and so forth, and then he would self-audit it. Well, I took a little pity on the case and gave him a little bit of auditing. And this is what it did. Here is an individual who is auditing himself. Who is himself? Auditing is a third dynamic situation, not a first dynamic situation. So there must be another party involved, so he must be auditing something. What's he auditing? Well, he's auditing a ridge or some kind of a thing that you could call an entity, which is to be a collection of energy energized or given life by the pre-clear himself, which has a separate personality or something of the sort. And this brings us up to one of the few exceptions that you find in cases where the pre-clear isn't getting well rapidly. You're sitting there auditing somebody who is auditing something. You know, you give him the command, and then he says, now you do this. See? I mean, it's very overt. Very overt. You give him the command, and then he gives the command to something else. Well, he's sitting back there as a spectator. And actually, you didn't really give him the command at all if he's doing this. It's just going into a sort of a machine that converts it into another machine that audits something else. Now, how do you handle that case? Will you make him audit something? Now, this is the most astonishing change will occur with a case when you do this. You make him audit something. You say, all right, now let's take whatever you got there, and now let's put it through opening procedure. Let's make it go here and go there and touch the ceiling and find a spot in the middle of the floor and touch that and let go of that. And let's get it to change its mind this way and change its mind that way. And he says, well, every time it touches the floor, it sticks. And you say, well, get it to change its mind about sticking to the floor. Oh, yes, yes, I can do that. No, it isn't sticking to the floor now. Yeah, that's quite a relief. Now, make it go here and do that. Now make it do this. Now make it do that. And the next thing you know, there's kind of a little sping, spung, and crunch, and you've just gotten rid of his favorite concentration point for his attention. His attention is concentrated on a piece of energy, and he just simply drills that piece of energy all the time. And this is a case manifestation, which is not terribly rare, but which should be suspected uniformly every time somebody apparently is making no real progress. He must be auditing something else. The first time I did this to anybody, it was quite spectacular. I gave him six steps to self-auditing. I just rolled it off one way after the other. Only I had him give them to the ridge which he was auditing. We had the ridge hold to the front corners of the room and had it duplicate things and had it do a lot of these things, you know. Just one right after the other. And the darndest things happened. Well, this was a fellow who was getting no change and nothing happening all the time, you see, in his case. Well, a lot happened, believe me, because we were for the first time actually following a communication line which existed and which was being used. And we blew it into view as being used, and so it became owned, so it, of course, blew, and was no longer a compulsive communication line. I simply had him put this object, whatever it was. In this case, by the way, it was a black screen that was sitting in front of his face. He was constantly auditing this black screen, using self-processing on it. Chew, 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 change, 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 see? And I had him put it up to the two corners of the room, and I had him do this, and I had him do that with it. You find out that these individuals who do this have had a tremendous scarcity of help and who have been in the vicinity of people who considered they had to be helped and there was a tremendous scarcity of help. They have, for instance, been hurt out someplace or another where there wasn't any immediate medical care, one life or another and so on, and they've gotten obsessed about the scarcity of help. But what do you know? They're also obsessed about the scarcity of things to help. They don't feel that they're needed by life because they can't help any part of life. Life obviously doesn't need any help from them at all. And this is a greater heartbreaker, by the way, than anything else. This fellow's walking around through the society and nobody needs him. Nobody needs any of his help at all, and yet he's trying to enter into a third dynamic relationship with all of existence. Well, if nobody needs any help from him, he must be the lowest, most degraded thing on earth. He just must be just lower than low if nobody needs any help from him, because just look out there, all of the things that do need help, and they don't accept it from him. And he goes around, he feels useless, he has no purpose, he must be pretty unpowerful if nobody needs his assistance. If I've seen, by the way, a child in a neighborhood change utterly simply by becoming a champion of some other child. He's found something he could protect, found something he could do, in other words, to interchange and give purpose, you might say, and significance to a third dynamic relation. And help is a basic significance to a third dynamic relation and is the easiest most pervasive consideration there is on the third dynamic. We wouldn't have a third dynamic at all unless we could help each other. And we get this individual who is doing self-processing is usually a person whose help has been consistently and continually declined. And he feels very bad about it. There is, you might say, a scarcity of patience. Maybe in some past life he's been a doctor, and he just lost a lot of patients, and he just didn't have many patients, and, you know, a lot of combinations here. He's been a doctor, he's been this, he's been that. But he had a scarcity of things to help. And there was a scarcity of help, as far as he's concerned, way back on the track. The essential jam-up on the third dynamic is aid and assistance, which, of course, is a heavier action level and has more purpose in it and is an easier consideration than simply, I will talk to you and you will talk to me, and now we have a third dynamic. See, we get a real interchange. Well, if you have to have help back and forth too, you have to have trouble. And this individual may have had a scarcity of trouble. And some of these people who go out here setting fires and so forth simply have a scarcity of help, scarcity of things they can help. How do they get that way? You say, that's terrifically destructive. Well, if everything's in good condition, then they're not needed. And so they go out and create some damage in order to be needed. But there isn't this much consideration to it. It's an intention, one of these arithmetical consideration adepts, which finally winds up in a destructive impulse. It's very, very common. This, by the way, is tremendously common for an individual to turn on and half ruin somebody who either would not permit him to help or who rebuked his help or who was not helped. Let's take some mother, for instance, who was savage to her boy. You know, he's maybe 12 now, and boy, she's just savage to him. Knocks him around, beats him around. We find out this boy is a fairly forthright and independent character. He's just sort of born that way, and he goes his own way pretty well. And he has this tremendous fixation on independence and the value of it and so on. And you can't do anything for him very much. Well, the truth of the matter is, she tried to help him, tries to do things for him, and there isn't an awful lot she can do for him, and she knocks him around. This will have genesis in the fact that he didn't get well one time or another as a baby or as a little child. She was just frantic. She's going around. She's trying to do everything she could do, and doctor comes in, and the doctor won't let her help him. And the husband and so forth says, well, you can't do anything for him anyway. But yet she did try, and she tried to help him, and she tried to make him well, and he just got sicker and sicker and so forth. She wind up mad at him. This is the weirdest thing. But she winds up angry. She winds up abusive and destructive about this object which she can't help. And you can plot the inevitable course of anybody who tries to help the society at large. It is in the absence of Scientology. But anybody who tries to help the society at large will finally wind up being so damn mad at it that it would, just for 2 cents, maybe in the next life or something like that, or maybe in that life, he'll turn around and aid and abet any force which will destroy that society. Well, if he can't help it in the state it's in, by golly, it's not very hard, you see, to reduce its state to a point where it'd let anything help it. You'd say the help acceptance level of the society has to be reduced by fascism or something of this sort to a point where they'll let even him help it. This is the kind of impulse which is directly behind Herr Hitler. Directly. Hitler undoubtedly earlier tries to help all of Europe, and then he fails and so on. And he said, well, the only answer to this thing is just ruin them, and when they're in a complete state of ruination and so on, why, then I will come along as the white savior and we'll help hell out of them. I'll show them. Now, this may not ring a bell with you right away, but you possibly can think of somebody that you think of this person as somebody you are mad at. And just plot back just a little bit. When did you find it impossible to help them? And we'll just track back. I mean, there's a great truth lying back of this. To help one another is a heavy and basic intention on the third dynamic. Very, very heavy, because it gives purpose and reason to the third dynamic. So if to help each other is such a game in itself, therefore to be in bad shape itself becomes a game, and you get the sole real manifestation of hypochondria, of illness, of the consideration that I am sick, and so on. If you consider you're sick, why then, of course, somebody's got to help you, and that's the basics of the consideration on that. If you find that you were fairly sick and nobody helped you, your tendency is to get awful damn sick, and then, by golly, they will. And a person who is running on this wishy-washy intention line, you know, it's just the summation of considerations has finally just gone out the bottom, and he's just in all directions, will actually lie out on the desert someplace where nobody could possibly get to him under any circumstances whatsoever and get sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker on the theory that, there's no theory back of it, the considerations add up to this accidental, that if he got sick enough, somebody would appear and help him. His being sick doesn't bring anybody in. It isn't communicating. Now, the basic trouble back of somebody who is doing a lot of self-processing then is a scarcity of people to help and a number of failures in having helped people. And he will eventually get an energy ridge, and he'll get that up against him someplace in here, and he'll try to help that. This is not an articulate intention. It isn't some reconscious mind at work here doing anything of the sort. It's just his considerations have finally summated into a set of counter considerations which are themselves at war. Just this way and that way, and nothing is agreeing with anything, and it's all kind of unreal. But he keeps auditing this thing, or he keeps processing this thing. Now, there's not much difference with this in Scientology or with a preclear than a person who's going down the street on some crutches nursing a bad leg. He's having a good time with that bad leg, but he has no intention about that bad leg, and you are missing the boat entirely if you say he has an active intention. I've heard auditors say this, by the way, and it's not right, because it grants the existence of a reconscious mind, you see. He's going down the street with a bad leg, and he has this bad leg simply to get sympathy or to get attention from people. Yeah, there's a basic truth in this, but this isn't the fellow's own intention. You see, he's just into this super bundle of considerations and counter-considerations, and he's asking himself, what the hell do I have this leg for? If he actually became convinced that he had that leg in order to get attention, sympathy, or in order to be helped, in order to give, to at least serve in the post of being something which others can now help, you know, there are a lot of people who were serving also simply by being sick, he's just, if he really got the idea of exactly what he was doing, he would go bing if he were totally convinced that was what he's doing. He's totally convinced. And, you know, he just looked at it and he realizes it and he understands this completely. He would get, wow. And so it is with any psychosomatic illness or derangement. But let's not assign this to an overt or even a covert personal intention of the individual. He's just this accidental combination of things which add up on the center line of a third dynamic, and it's just to help and be helped and so on, and these are all cross-considered and so on, and he finally winds up and he's got a bad leg, or he's got a bad case, or any way you want to look at it. But he doesn't have a self-determined intention about it. He hauls off one fine day and he says, you know, this is incredible, but I do have a bad leg. This is a fact. I do have a bad case. This is a fact. Now, what the devil am I going to do about it? And he said, well, Ron said, all you had to do is change your mind if he's an auditor, and let's see if I can change my mind about a few things. I don't know, but that isn't helping my case any. Let's see. What can I do about this? You see, his intention now is the first clear-cut intention he's had for a long time, which is to do something about it and come back upscale again. Why doesn't he come immediately back upscale again? His considerations are in concrete. And being in concrete, he's going up against all these other considerations which are themselves reality, and he has only laterally made up his mind to get well, and he's tried to make that intention stick, but the other intentions are exactly counter to that, which is to be sick, and he's disowned them, so they're now his randomity. He'll get sicker as a result. This is a heck of a combination of the state of affairs, but this is in essence what happens. Now that you know about it, you can undoubtedly remedy it with an individual by doing what? By improving his ability to change his mind.